listening to the C Word Radio, the podcast where we ask, what the fuck does young cancer survivorship mean? With me, Helen King, and guests. Subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Today we're delving into the back catalogue of the C Word Radio and revisiting one of my favourite interviews. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode, so don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you don't miss an episode. A quick content warning about today's episode. I am doing a series of interviews about how cancer treatment impacts our fertility and parenthood. In today's episode, my guest and I are talking about IVF treatment, which I know can be quite a sensitive topic. Also, there's some swearing, mostly from me. So if you have young ones in the room, maybe pop on some headphones. I met my guest in 2018 when we were both going through cancer treatment. Rebecca Van Dyke was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. And like many young people, when we're diagnosed with cancer, Rebecca had not had children yet. We chatted recently about our experiences with fertility treatment and what it's like facing the possibility of not having a child. This is Rebecca's story. I've been noticing on your Facebook that I think you and I are at a very similar point where you have a scan coming up and I have a scan coming up.
Yes.
Yes, it's that time of year.
Yes, yay, most dreadful time of the year. Well, I'm every 6 months and this is MRI time and I'm like, I'll be fine, sweet as, no worries. Life is going good. And then I get the phone call or the email saying, remember to book your MRI. And I'm like, okay, no, I can do this. I've done this many times before. I'll be totally fine. And then I'm just sitting there. And then all of a sudden, for me, the breath gets taken away. Like my heart drops. And there's like this pressure on my throat. And there's this feeling like, you know how you go over a bump in the road?
Oh, yeah. And your stomach goes down.
Yeah. And I'm like, whoa. And I'll just be eating my dinner or reading an email or watching TV. And I won't even be thinking about the scan o'clock. And all of a sudden, this feeling comes and you're like, come on, dude, I wasn't even thinking about you.
Yeah.
But then I just have to remember, oh, no, it's just that time of year. And yeah. Then my technique is to, like, to snap out of it. I just quickly look around and I'm like, what can I see? What can I hear? What can I smell? And then it just goes away again. So I've never had a full-blown attack, but it's like this little shit that comes around every now and then is like, hey.
It really does. I meant to have had a blood test 2 weeks ago. Helen has not had her blood test. Yeah, because any scan, any test, any consultation with a doctor, I find it really hard to commit.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you.
Anyway, look, people are probably wondering, gosh, these two know each other. So Rebecca and I kind of had breast cancer around the same time. I think you were a few months ahead of me. So why don't we set the scene a little bit and tell us when, where, what type, all those details.
Well, it was a lovely weekday evening. So where do I start? I'll start right at the start. So I was lying in bed one night and I just sort of brushed against my, I don't know when I was scratching or something, but kind of around my collarbone and just below that, lying in bed, I was like, oh, what's that? And it kind of felt like a little lump and I wasn't too worried. So I thought I'll check in the shower the next morning. So then I checked in the shower and I couldn't feel it. And I thought, oh, nothing. And then a couple of days later, I was lying in bed and I felt it again. I was like, that's odd. So then in the shower, I checked myself again. I was like, no, I can't feel anything. But then I went, oh, you're supposed to do this.
Oh, yeah.
And I did that. And I had my hand right on my, it was at 1 o'clock on my right boobsicle. And I put my hand up. And as soon as I put my arm up, it was like, hello. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, oh, no worries. I'll just get that checked. And went to the doctor a couple of days later. So that was very end of November 2017, I felt a lump. And then right at the start of December was the earliest appointment I could get at the doctor. It was just right around the corner, but I wasn't too worried. I was like, yeah, whatever, next available, no rush.
Yeah.
And then she's like, yeah, okay, well, it's probably nothing, but let's get it checked out just in case. And I'm like, cool. So I went for an ultrasound, followed by, if they found something on the ultrasound, then I'd have a mammogram. And then from that, they did find something, so I had a mammogram. And then I had a specialist appointment to talk about what they found. And at that time, he's like, oh, I can do a quick biopsy while you're here. I'm like, okay, away we go. Oh, that was a guided biopsy. So the nurse was there with the doctor, the specialist, and they did a quick biopsy. And then, well, quick. It took seven of the
gum. Oh, yes, yes.
Biopsy with the specialist the first time round, and it took seven goes with the wee gun to get a few samples. And at one point, it felt like he goes, oh, would you like some more, like, anesthetic, whatever the heck it was? And I'm like, yes, please, because it felt like, you know, those big novelty hands?
Yes.
At the baseball games? It was like someone had one of those, but it was a rock.
Yeah.
And they just went, what? And I just remember thinking, oh! So he gave me a little bit more anesthetic, and away we went again, thank goodness. And from that, the results came back. And he goes, oh, it's probably a fibroadenoma, which is nothing to worry about. But when we open back up after Christmas, I'll get you to do an ultrasound guided biopsy. And that's a bit like, more targeted. And we'll have better results from that. Because it was just a little bit inconsistent, and he wasn't happy with the results. So sent away, and I was like, I just remember thinking, cancer goes on Christmas? Like, at this time, it wasn't cancer, but everything shut down over Christmas. Does cancer do at Christmases too? It's a wee holiday, that's nice. And I thought, oh, well, it should be nothing. And then after Christmas, it was the second day that the breast clinic opened, I went in for an ultrasound guided biopsy, and she just took three goes. And I said to her, oh, is that it? And she goes, yeah. And I said, oh, the last time it was like seven goes. And she goes, I know what I'm doing. And like, she's been sassy and funny about it. But from that one, I think I knew then that it was something serious, because I went in and we were all, oh, how's your Christmas holidays, meat fishing, blah, blah, blah. And then she got the ultrasound going, and the room went quite serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to like get my serious pants on here. That was the 9th of January. I waited till the 26th of January for my results from that. And in hindsight, like, I was fuming at the time. I was like, why is it taking so long to get these results back? Like, if it's nothing, just tell me.
Mm.
And they said, no, procedures, we can't, you know, over the phone, you've got to come in, no matter what. I'm like, okay. So they went in, and he was like, okay, so blah, 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 invasive ductal carcinoma. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, so it is cancer. And I went, okay. And then my husband was with me. There was a nurse, and then there was the specialist. And I remember thinking, when he goes, it is cancer. And there was this pause. And I was like, oh, is this the bit where you're supposed to lose it? Like, I was like, what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the plan? And I just remember thinking, like I'd shifted into another gear. And I was like, right, what's the plan? And he goes, I think he was a bit like, oh, okay. So... And then I remember my husband's hand reaching over to mine, and I was like, no, it's good. He's got a plan. And then he launched into it, and he goes, okay, so it looks like it's triple negative. And I remember saying, what stage is it? Because before I went in, I Googled the stages.
Oh, God.
But that's it. Like, I wasn't a big Googler until after diagnosis for like a couple of weeks, and then I stopped.
Mm-hmm.
I broke up and stopped to Google. My husband hears this, he'll laugh. That's true. And, yeah, so got in there and, like, 1 to 4. And I just remember that. And when he goes, it looks like it's stage 2.
Mm.
And I remember thinking then, okay. I remember feeling so relieved, like, to be told you have cancer.
Yeah.
And then he was like, stage two, I don't think I've ever felt just so relieved in my life. I mean, not that that's great, because that can be bad. And, oh, yeah, but for my mentality, I mean, but of course we weren't really sure exactly if it was stage two until further down track. So it ended up being stage two, grade three, triple negative.
Wow. And
the plan of attack was, he said, fertility treatment, chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation. That's plan A. Plan B is fertility treatment, if we still can, if there's enough fun. Chemo, if the chemo doesn't work, straight into a mastectomy, and then figure out the rest from there. Okay. And then I remember thinking at the time, why can't I just get it out first? So I was really annoyed at that. I just wanted it out. This cancer that felt like a golf ball sitting on my chest, I just wanted it out. And now I realise, because now everyone's different, so other people who have triple negative have different plans of attack. But for me, given my factors, it was that the tumour would act as like a traffic light or an indicator, basically.
Yeah.
They start the chemo with triple negative. It's kind of like the unknown. It's either going to work or it's not. So if the tumour started shrinking, then it was working, hopefully. And then even after the first one, it had gone from 7 centimetres down to, I think, 5. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good. Keep that bad boy in there. And then I had almost a complete pathological response, I think they call it, and went down to like 3.5 millimetres. So they were very happy with that. And then surgery, I chose to have a lumpectomy, given all my factors. Again,
it's really interesting, isn't it? I think going through almost like a parallel process with someone through cancer, because we have both arrived at the fertility stage, which was such a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So fun.
Such fun.
Like when you say to people, oh, yeah, we're, you know, trying for a family, yes, we're trying, or have fun with that. Because when the kids come along, there's no romance. I'm like, oh, you've got no idea. Baby making is the most unromantic thing.
Yeah.
More people, since we've been married, I said this to my husband the other day, since we've been married, more people have tried to get me pregnant and played with my lady bits than he has.
Yeah.
Like, that's not romance. I mean, romantic, our first Valentine's Day, just after we married.
Yeah.
Not long after I got diagnosed, blah, blah. Fast forward to Valentine's Day, we had our egg collection. So just after we got the diagnosis about fertility, managed to squeeze in around egg freezing before that.
Yeah.
So everything's happening. I'm doing my injections, crazy woman. And then Valentine's Day comes along and I was like, happy Valentine's Day, babe. We're about to go make a couple of babies and or embryos, hopefully. Yeah. And we did. We got two embryos. Well, we had 5 eggs collected, which made it was like Survivor. The day they ran up into the egg, and so we had 5 eggs. The second day, 3 made it. Then it was down to 2 next day, and then it was back up to 3.
Yeah.
And then they didn't phone us until day 5, which was my first day of chemo. So I was expecting great news. And they phoned and I was like, I really need some good news. And they go, well, unfortunately, we just have to give them 1 more day. So I remember going to chemo thinking, oh, well, my good news has just been burst and we've got to wait 1 more day. So then next day came and we ended up having 2 frozen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was very romantic. Valentine's Day 2018.
So lovely. They don't make a card for that, though, do they? They don't.
They should do.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? I was thinking back as you were talking, because we have 2 as well, and I remember that attrition rate of, we've got this many, okay, well, only this many survive. And so she rings back and she's like, we've got 1, and I remember my heart dropping, thinking, that's not many. And then she said, no, we'll wait 1 more day. And then it felt like, the second day, then, yes, there was another one. And it was just because I was 37. And so obviously then having to wait 2 years or things going well. And then obviously there's a pandemic and things.
Yeah.
And I just knew that actually I probably wouldn't be able to get pregnant that far along. Like it does drop dramatically as you get older. And so I don't know. I just felt like this sense of fucking hell. There just seemed to be this unfairness. And I know I don't want to sound like I'm, I don't know, having a tantrum or whatever, but it just, there was part of me that felt so fucking angry that this was happening and that my chance of motherhood was actually not really in my hands as such. I mean, it's not anyone's hand, but you know what I mean? It's sort of,
It's like cancer treatment gave us a future.
Yeah.
But not the future that we had envisioned.
No.
So it's like, everyone's like, oh, yay, cancer treatment where you can carry on life as normal. It's like, well,
no,
it was actually a toss-up. I knew going into it, which is why you do fertility preservation prior.
Yes.
The chemo and whatever can nuke your baby.
I didn't realise that it can shrink your ovaries.
I learned something new. And I guess since doing chemo, I've always known that the possibility for me to have babies in the future is less and less and less and less. But then you get out the other side and people see you looking healthy again. I did half a marathon and woo, go me, and bloody knackered now. I'll never do one of those again. still recovering from a year and a half later. People see you and you're like, you'll be fine. You're still young and this and that. And you're looking good. Your hair's back, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is it's an actual possibility. It's actual reality. I can't have kids.
Yes.
For other people, they have a hard time accepting that versus me. I live with it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And other people can just go, oh, but you're young, you're healthy, you can still get pregnant. Naturally, my doctor said you can still have a spontaneous pregnancy. In theory, it's still possible. But when she says spontaneous pregnancy, I think spontaneous, like you pop around the corner, wow, that's spontaneous. Yes. You can still have a spontaneous pregnancy. I imagine opening the dishwasher, spontaneous pregnancy.
Yeah, there's the baby. You know?
So it's just the words that they use. And the other word is geriatric, spontaneous pregnancy.
Yeah.
That should be a freak show. But yeah, I just sort of went off track there. But yeah, so I think the main thing with that was I have been dealing with the reality of possibly not having a kid for the last 3.5 years.
Yeah.
But everyone still sees IVF as the miracle. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, my mate did IVF for 5 years and spent $100,000 and now she's got a gorgeous baby boy. And it's like, yeah, but did they go through chemo and I guess at the same time, I always feel guilty saying these things because I'm like, yeah, but these other people, I guess, say if you had, I don't know, maybe ovarian cancer or something similar and you have radiation directly to
exactly. That area.
I always think of those people sitting there going, yeah, but at least your radiation was completely nuked.
When we first spoke about this topic, something you said has stayed with me. And I think that for me, when you've been describing, oh, people tried for 5 years and spent, you know, this amount of money, when you said, how much more grief can I handle? And to be honest, for me, that is the point. It's like, can I mentally, physically, and emotionally, could I cope with 5 rounds of chemo? Five rounds, I can do that, of IVF. I mean, take away even just the financial cost. I think when you have been through something like we have with cancer, and it is so freaking traumatizing, and there is so much grief and things, I don't think I could go 5 rounds of unsuccessful IVF.
Mm.
Like to me, that's like even preparing for my first embryo transfer, there's seriously part of me that thinks, I don't know if I can cope with this. So that has been sitting with me quite a bit since we spoke, because it was like, yeah, that's very, very true.
Yeah. And the first round of IVF for me, so it got cut into two, I guess you could say. So my IVF journey, is that that word, but I always use it.
Yeah.
I have love, hate, like, anyway. Chapter. Yeah. So chapter one, IVF, the first half was before cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Get the eggs. Second half actually started in November last year.
Yeah.
So we got the 2-year all clear about this time last year. We started trying naturally, and then I thought, well, give it a year. And then someone suggested, why don't you go get your AMH checked and see what levels you're at. Mine was at the bottom of low.
Wow.
So, and I used to have the embryos. So my fertility doctor said, well, up to you if you what you want to do. So I said, well, let's just go for it. Let's use them rather than wait and see what happens. I'm glad I did. So November, we started with a natural cycle. So they were just tracking my period and seeing when my levels rise. So I ovulated, and then from there, they were going to match it. And then, say, 5 or so days later, they were going to defrost the embryo, pop it in, and away you go. However, they couldn't see when I exactly had ovulated, so they cancelled that, and I wasn't mentally prepared for that.
I was like,
what? And they go, yeah, so we're not comfortable with going here. And I was like, I was quite angry, because I was like, no, just do it. But at the same time, I was like, oh, thank you. Yeah. We're not just doing it.
Yeah.
We had to wait. December didn't work because we're going on holiday. January, it didn't work because they had their break, and then cycle-wise didn't pair up. So we tried in February. And then that was a manufactured cycle. Mm. So what they do is put you on pills, and they basically hijack your cycle.
Mm.
So they can have a couple of pills, do-do-do-do-do, and then you get a couple more pills, and that stops you from ovulating, and they hijack it from there. And then they can give you however it worked, some ovulate, and then they popped in the embryo. So we get down there, and someone in Auckland had sneezed, and you were all back in level 3. So we were going down there, and we had to get through the checkpoint.
And oh, yeah.
What are you doing in Auckland? And I wanted to be like, me here, baby. And I was like, oh, we're going to the fertility clinic. Here are my letters. No, we just going up and down in one day. So we got down there, and I went into the clinic by myself, husband and Mr. McGoo, the dog, waited in the car.
No.
And it just felt like every other clinical procedure I'd had, not because of how the staff acted.
Yeah, yeah.
They were lovely, so nice, but it was just because the last time I was in a clinical facility, it was cancer. So yes, this felt no different. And I only told a few people because they were like, oh, my God, that's so exciting. And I'm like, it's really not. It is the least most exciting thing right now, and I wish I could be excited. And then I got into the little room, and she goes, okay, we've got some good news and some bad news.
Oh, God.
And she goes, and fortunately I'd said to my husband on the way down, by the way, you do realise that not all embryos survive the thawing process. And he was like, oh. And then I sort of, because he's in every appointment with me, but obviously he's, got his own, now he hears what he hears.
Of course,
I hear other things. So I just reminded him, and then she goes, okay, so the first embryo did not survive the thawing process. And that hit me, and I was like, whoa. And in a split second, I grieved this entire life.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And I was like, wow, it was a split second where this life flashed before my eyes of this life that had never happened. And I was like, wow, shit. And it was the weirdest feeling. And I was like, okay, no worries. She goes, okay, but we've got the second one. It did survive. And away we go. I was like, okay, buddy, no pressure. But I went in, and she popped it in. And then we drove away. So I texted my husband. And while I was in the wee waiting room, I said, hey, babe, just by the way, the first one didn't survive, but second one did. And away we go. So got back out from the car, and he was like, oh. I didn't really realised that. And I was like, I know. Oh. So it was a bit of a downer. And I said, oh, by the way, we have to stop off at McDonald's and buy some chips.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the law of IVF. And have you go and get some McDonald's chips afterwards. And he was like, why? And I said, because that's what happens. I don't like pineapple. We're not doing the pineapple thing. Which is just eat pineapple for anyone who's listening.
I'm noting this.
So I was like, so we had that, and you get given a little wee picture of the screen of the ultrasound scan, and we had that. I was like, here you go, here's Mr. Blobby, or Master Blobby, is what I called it, Master Blobby. It was Master Blobby the first, because that was the first embryo that worked. And then... So a couple of weeks later, found out that that didn't work. And then I had the scan and the glove box in the car, and then I was looking for something not long ago before the second one, and I was like, oh, and then it hits you like a ton of bricks. And I wanted to throw it out, but I was like, no, we'll have that. So I ended up going and buying a pot thing, like a wine barrel, filled it with dirt and put some flowers in. And I did that, and that for me was like my little commemorative mark. Lobby. And then, that didn't work. And we had a month off, and the doctor said, okay, so what would you like to do? And we'd already talked, and I said, we want to just carry on. We want to give it another shot. So if we wanted to do public, because we were eligible for public funding, 15 to 18 months. Whoa. And I was like, oh. Nah, and we'd already talked, and we said, right, we'll do it private. So we got that ball rolling, and we did a private round of IVF. So we started all over again, so with the injections.
Oh, shit.
It wasn't as bad as the first time round, because the first time round when I was doing the injections, there was one point, and my husband asked me, what would you like for dinner? And I just remember sitting on the couch, and he was yelling out from the other room. And I just remember saying, just make the fucking dinner. And I was like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah.
So I was expecting crazy woman.
Yeah.
Especially because my second round of IVF that I've just done, they had me on the highest potency for the injections to create the follicles, which hopefully contain an egg. So I was fully expecting crazy woman. But I wasn't. My husband probably... describe it, but I wasn't as bad as I thought. I thought because I'd be on the highest, but I think my body is just so used to crap being pumped into it that it's like, whatever, I can take this. So, we did that, and a couple of weeks, pew-pew, doing the injections. Then this time he was able to come to all the appointments with me. Thankfully, Auckland was behaving. Back at level one. And so that was nice. So that I was a lot more excited about round two. I was not excited about round one. And I kind of felt bad, but I only felt bad because of other people's expectation and excitement for me. So that's one thing I've learned is to, I'm now honest with people, and it's, and they're like, I'm so excited for you. And I'll say, great, I'm glad someone is. I've just had some, people say stupid shit to me, but they don't realise they're saying stupid. Like, I was talking about public funding and the wait list, and someone said, oh, well, surely you can just ring them up and when there's a cancellation, and like the dentist.
Oh, my God.
I was like, no.
Yeah.
I just put my foot down that. And then another one was, well, it works with cows all the time, the artificial insemination. And I'm like, can you just compare me to a cow being artificially inseminated?
You should have asked them to come in and inseminate you. Well, let's do a cut price deal here and bring your equipment.
And they go, no, it will work. And I said, I fucking hope it works, because we're spending $16,000 on this. And then I was like, that's it. Finish talking. And I was just like, so that person now, I just don't make sure they're not there when I'm talking to the other people about it. Yeah.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I was publicly funded for my rounds before chemo. But I'm not going to be for that. Sorry, I just find this so. So I was too fat and old to be funded.
For you were geriatric.
Geriatric and obese. Yes. So fuck me. So basically by the time, because we tried naturally and it didn't work, but also I found it, I don't know, I just found it quite distressing because it was like, and you'll probably relate to this as well, because we used those funny sticks to try and figure out when I was ovulating and things, which was...
Ovulating, get here now.
I know, which was confusing for me because it was just like, am I doing this right? And then this whole thing of what if I'm not? And it was just this, excuse my language, but it was a mind fuck. And then every month being convinced that you were, because nature is cruel and all our PMS symptoms are the same as early pregnancy. And it just got too much.
Yeah.
And it took any intimacy out of having sex. And then just that emotional roller coaster every month of am I, aren't I, was... Yeah, it was too much. Because of my age, they said try for about 3 to 6 months. If it doesn't work, go and see your doctor. And went to the fertility doctor and she said, very kindly, basically I'd have to lose 17 kilos before I turned 40, which wasn't very many months away. Yeah. And I chose not because I actually thought trying to lose that amount of weight that quickly would put stress on my body, sure.
Massive stress on your body.
But then... I stupidly put that on Facebook and then everyone decided to tell me that, well, it would help me get pregnant if I wasn't such a fatty, fatty boy.
Fertility doctors know the ins and outs of you.
Yeah. And the interesting thing was, which I found fascinating, was that the doctor said to me, but we cannot actually say for sure whether you losing that weight would give you any better chance. The main factor in all of this is your age. And I can't lose my age. I can't drop 3 years of my age. I think this is the thing, is that if you haven't been through the fertility quagmire, then you don't realise how freaking stressful and emotional it is to be facing not having children. And I think women probably feel this more because it's our bodies that are under so much scrutiny and is the body that goes through the most to try and get pregnant. Like, men jizz in a cup.
God, I wish I could trade.
Excuse my crassness, as my mother would say, but really, like...
I'm like, oh, good luck, babe. I'm thinking of you. Like, kia kaha. He's like, oh, I've got such a tough job. And I'm just like, don't even joke.
I know, right? It's so crazy. Because I've meant to have had a blood test, and I haven't because I am naughty and I hate blood tests. Yeah. But I also have to have my mammogram before we can actually get the final sign off to say, yep, we can try it the next cycle. I said to my partner recently, it just feels like cancer's always there. This is another hurdle. It's like you're holding your breath until you have that next scan to say, yep, you're okay for another year.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, and it's, I think people expect you, your hair grows back, you lose your salami. Your nose hair grows back.
Yeah. Thankfully. My nose didn't recover very... It was weird not having nose hair. Who knew it was so important? But anyway, that's another topic.
Yeah, your nose hair grows back. People are like, oh, you're looking healthy. Yay, go you. But your insides are still recovering and it still, you know, can be damaged for the rest of your life.
I think people see the exterior and they don't realise that actually the impact of cancer isn't so much the outside stuff, it's the inside stuff. And kind of, I don't know about you, but at the moment, I am preparing to have an embryo transfer, but my head is also thinking, how do I prepare for not having kids? Like, how does that work? Like, we have 2 dogs who I love and drive me nuts. Yep. And I have my lovely cat who I'm convinced will never die, thank you very much. But I just think, I don't know how that goes. How do you just sort of get on with life without that happening?
And the big one for me, I feel like I had an epiphany not too long ago. And I feel like the the people I talk to, there's sort of two different responses I get when I talk to people about chemo. Okay, my God, when I talk to when I talk to people about IVF, it's, I'm so excited for you, it's going to work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but it might not. And they're like, no, it will. And I'm like, yeah, but it actually might not. And they go, you've got to stay positive. I'm like, okay. But that's completely ignoring the reality.
Yep.
And those people who put that pressure on me or anyone going through IVF, I only get that from people who have kids.
Yes.
Not saying that everyone who has kids has that reaction, but
yeah,
for the people that have reaction, that have their kids, I envision them thinking about their child and thinking it has to work because I can't imagine my life without my child. And so that's them. I'm not in that realm. I'm not in that bubble. I might never know what that's like. That is my reality. Stop putting your fear on me. Other friends who have kids, I had a great conversation with a friend not long ago, and she's like, we were chatting about it. She goes, oh, and then I said, but this might not work in the end, and we're just going to have to shift our focus, adjust the sails, and cruise off in a different direction. And when I say that, it always goes one of two ways. It goes, no, you got to keep going. Or they go, I love your response to that.
Yes.
And they go, you do. I look at other people and I think, I don't want to be like that person, or I love that person. Why are they like that? What battles have they been through? And I hate that word, battle. What duties have they been through? Yeah. What chapters of life have shat on them? So, and I look at them and I think, oh, and someone a couple of years ago said to me that they go, oh, yeah, it's the fact that the choice
yes.
got taken from them.
Oh, God, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And they weren't 100% whether they wanted kids anyway, but the choice got taken.
And that's where I'm at. Because I have been the person my whole life who went, I don't think I really want kids. Don't really think so, thanks. And then basically the very short story is I decided I would quite like to have children and then I got cancer. Yeah, and so that is a grief for me, definitely, is that this is, that choice was taken away from me. And I know you could say, well, you might not have anyway, you blah, blah, blah. But actually, no, a large proportion of it was taken out of my hands. So I've decided when we tried the embryo transfer, I'm going to tell a few people and I'm going to say to them, do not ask me about it, please. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way.
Yeah.
I will tell you if it works. If I don't tell you, just assume it hasn't. And I just need to be able to sit with that and not feel any sort of outside pressure about, oh, you can try again, et cetera. I just need to do this in my way, please.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I told a few people and I didn't tell them the results until after the blood test, even though I peed on a stick beforehand.
Yes.
No way was I going to be at work when I got that big fat no phone call.
Yeah.
I don't have any symptoms. Like, I don't think it's worked this time. Or I'm trying to remain positive.
Mm.
Like, yeah, positive thoughts. And I try and express, like, my reality.
Mm.
But again, it's that toxic positivity. And it's, no, I have faith. I've said some prayers. I've done this, done that. And I'm like, well, are you praying to the right person? Try another one.
Yeah.
There's many saints, many gods. Give the next one a go. Yeah, and I'd already known that I was a big fat no. So then the blood test came back and I told them, and I'd already dealt with it. I'd be like, oh, well, big fat no. Yes, it sucks. Some real shit. But I've processed that and I've moved on. And then they're, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sad. I'm so gutted. And I'm like, are you okay? And then I end up consoling them.
Oh, and it's so like,
I'm like, oh.
And you are having to, deal with other people's emotions. What I want to say to people is I will tell you, if I want to talk about it, I will, but let's just sort of leave it at that because I don't want to have to deal with that shit.
Yeah. And so many, yeah, it's just so many women going through this. And I think I went into it a little bit naively, thinking IVF is the be-all and the end-all, but it's not. For a lot of people, it is. But and I don't want to be a bummer or a downer for people, but the actual reality that I have accepted, and if it does become my reality, it's not like I won't be gutted that I can't have kids, but I will. If that happens, I will deal with that then.
Yes.
I will process that then. I will hit up the counselling sessions that we've got and I will make use of those and deal with that. But I've seen other people in their life and they've spent their whole life wanting kids. They can't have kids and they've sort of wasted those years when they could have been happy. I don't really know how to put that into words, but I see them and they've longed for kids and that's all they've been focused on. They can't have them. And it is the worst thing in the world. And that is a reality for people. But I live in fear of that being me. So I've taken a step back. And if it is, it is. If it's not, it's not. And it's not the end of the world. Like, you've got, like, this allocation of love. Just because you don't have a kid doesn't mean that love's going to go to waste. You give it out in other areas.
Yeah.
Be it you adopt all the dogs or you get involved in the kids' soccer team at school, or you might go, oh no, shit, I can't be around kids and other people's kids. So you get into landscaping, gardening. Like,
are you talking about yourself?
Yes. I'm sorry, but I've got all these seeds and I'm going to get into growing dahlias or dahlias or whatever they are. So I've been sort of shifting my focus, like, this is a reality, so we're going to try for kids, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, well, shit, and let's just adjust those sails and start growing flowers and watch them bloom, because flowers to me are like kids, and you've got to look after them, and you've got to feed them, and then they grow up to be beautiful, or they can grow up to be little shits.
That's a fantastic analogy. Hey, thank you so much for talking with me about this. I know it is a hard topic. I find it quite challenging talking about it because it is, it's deeply personal. So I appreciate you sharing your experience.
The more I talk about things, the easier it's become. And I read a quote the other day and I put it up on my Instagram and it was something like, I wrote it down, I recover loudly so others don't have to suffer silently.
Yes.
And when I share stuff, I'm not sharing it for someone to go, oh, boo-hoo, woe is her.
Yeah.
I'm sharing it for that one person that goes, oh, my God, me too. I was a bit hesitant to talk about it, but there's so many people going through it. And the big thing is for me, the reality is I may not be able to have kids. Hopefully I listen back to this in a year and I'm up duff and I'm like, oh, bless, look at, but I might listen back to this in a year and go, yeah, go you were right. And as I sip my martini at 10 in the morning, maybe I'm doing that in another year's time. And just, because big thing for me, so many have contacted me and said, me too, I'm going through this. And the reality of life after cancer, I don't think there is no after you, even though I'm NED, it's always there.
Yes.
Whether it's you're in the shower, you see your scar, you go for a blood test, you're like, oh my God, this isn't even cancer related. But I feel like I'm right back in this. The third week of chemo when you've got to have your blood test. But getting an embryo transfer, you just feel like you're going for another scan. And people, sort of don't realise that. But the ones that are going through it go, oh, me too. I thought I was the only one. I felt really bad and I didn't want to say anything. I'm like, hit me up, DM me, message me, and we will have a rant together. And it's so nice just letting that all out. And it's like a weight's lifted off you and you can talk to someone who gets it versus the muggles who just don't.
Exactly. Well, thank you. And I kind of want to say good luck or best of luck or fucking go get him. But
yeah.
I don't know what to say.
I like that last. This is what it is. And I laugh. I'm like, I used to say, oh, well, if it doesn't work, we'll be that uncle and aunt, the rich ones always going off. But now I'm like, with no kids, but now I'm like, we're not even going to be that rich uncle and aunt because with no kids, because we've got no money. We're trying for them.
And we're in a pandemic.
Oh, well, shit happens. Yeah. Build a bridge, get over it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for listening. The C Word Kiwis Talk About Cancer is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/C Word.
All the time, I've been searching for a new definition.